a gift that's has strings to it. Okay. So, yeah. The coin goes around from one storage area to another one, looking for a handout, right? So he says, if the judge is such that he doesn't know, but he says he has to depend on this one and on this one and on this one in order to tell him, you know, how to judge, then in that case, he destroys it. The Nasi appointed a judge who really was not learned. So Amale Yehuda Bar Nachmani, Metugamani the Resh Lakish. So he said to Yehuda Bar Nachmani, who was the Meturgamon of Resh Lakish, and he said, Kum Alei Be'amora, go and rise up literally about this particular teacher. Okay. So, first of all, I have to explain, what is the Meturgamon? What do we mean by Meturgamon? Today, if I tell you Meturgamon, it means somebody who...
An interpreter, a translator,
you know. You know the word Targum, which is, right, the translation originally, the first Targum that you had is the Targum of Unculus, but also we refer to the Targum HaShivim, the translation of the Torah into Greek by 70 scholars, famous historian in the Gemara Megillah about that, and so on. And that was the Meturgamon. However, in the days of the Talmud, what happened was that the teacher would have his Meturgamon. He would whisper into the Meturgamon, you know, what to talk about, and then the Meturgamon would say aloud, you know, what the teacher had taught. Okay. Okay?
So the teacher didn't teach?
The teacher was the loudspeaker, right. I mean, the teacher, right. Because very often, you know, there were many, many... So they needed somebody, though.
Who could translate.
Who could translate and explain what the teacher is hinting at. Right. This is the one... Right. Exactly. So, Yehuda Bar Nachmani happened to be the Meturgamon of Resh Lakish. Okay. So Resh Lakish, you know, told him, go ahead, do something about this guy. So, Kam Gochen Alei, so he rose up, he leaned over and he didn't say anything. Frankly, I think how I have to interpret it is a little bit differently. I think what we have to say is as follows. The judge is there, he's appointed, but he doesn't know what to say. To me, that makes a little bit more sense, if I understand correctly what the text is saying over here. Okay? He didn't say anything. Didn't know what to say. So, Poschach v'Yomar, so the Meturgamon began the discourse by quoting a Poschach. What is the Poschach? Poschach happens to be from Habakkuk, where it says, Hoy omelo eitz hokita. Woe unto the one who says to the wood or to the tree, wake up. Uri la Evan Domain, or wake up to the stone which is silent. Who Yore? Can he literally teach? Can he teach anything? Inehu tafus zahav v'chesef v'chorach ein v'kibo. Yes, he's covered with gold and with silver, but nevertheless, there is no spirit within him. In other words, this Dayan is what? He has the trappings of a judge. He's wearing the magisterial coat, so to speak. The trappings of gold and silver, literally, right?
He's an empty suit.
But it's an empty suit, exactly. The Yosin HaKadosh Baruch Hu Parah B'Ma'amidim, and the Beit HaShalelem is going to take punishment, will punish one of these days the people who appointed somebody like that. Shenemar, as it's written, Bad Hashem Heichal, not the fellows over there in the Habakkuk, said, Bad Hashem Heichal Kocho, the Lord is in his holy temple, right? Has Mipadov Kolors, let the entire earth be silent before him. Omer Reish Lakish, Rashaf Lakish said, Kol Hamamid Dayon, Alatzibur Sheda Hogun, right? Whoever appoints a judge over the congregation who is not worthy, ki ilo notea asherah b'Yisrael. It's as if he is planting an asherah that we have, of course, in Avodah Zarah again and again, if you remember, you know, the idolatry tree, right, in Israel, right. Shenemar, as it's written, shoftim v'shotrim titen lecha, right, Pasuk says you are to appoint judges and police, the Samachvei, and then right next to it says, Lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz. Do not plant, an asherah or any kind of a tree, right? Right, right. So you see, that's the connection between them. Omer Rav Ashi said, Omekom, sheyesh talmidei chachomim, gilin eto eitzel mizbeach. And in a place where there are other Talmidei Chachamim who know what it's all about, it's as if he planted this Asherah right next to the altar of the Bnei Shalom. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Lo Titalucha Asherah Kol Eitz, Eitzel Mizbach Ad Hashem Elokecha, right? Next to the altar of the Lord your God. There should not be any tree. So you have to have a judge who knows his business, and, woe to those who appoint judges who know nothing. Ksiv, it's a pasuk, Lo sa'asun iti elahei chesem elahei zahav. Do not literally make together with me gods of silver or gods of gold, right? Elahei chesem elahei zahav, hu delo avdei. Only gods of silver or of gold you're not to make. Oh, the eight shari, so you mean then that a tree, if you make a god out of a wood, right, it's okay? So my Rav Ashi, said, Eloa habo bishvil kesev, Eloa habo bishvil zahav. Do not make a god who comes because he wants silver, or a god because he wants gold. In other words, what? Someone who becomes a judge, not because he knows, but simply because he's attracted, that he can make money doing bribes, the job. Bribes, whatever it may be. Even a salary. Even a salary.
Even the salary.
Yeah. There are judges.
Right. Honor that goes with
right,
it.
Right.
Like gold and silver.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's a good point.
I'll do a couple of more lines and I'll call it. It's okay because I'm running out of steam. Okay. Rav ki hava osel veidina. When Rav came to the court, Omar Hochi, so he said to himself, actually, as follows. Willingly, he's going out in order to be killed. In other words, if I make a mistake, the Rebbeinu Shalom is going to punish me, right? Yet I have not taken care of the needs of my household. And I come back to my house empty-handed. Ulavai shetahei biar katsia. And may would to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that when I come home, it'll be the way I leave. In other words, I'll abide that nothing should go wrong when I'm judging a trial, right? And may I come back the same way when I left the house. You know, in other words, at that time I was righteous in my judgment, so I hope that I come back home similarly with righteous in my judgment. Okay, I think I better stop at this point. Okay, tonight is the 9th of June, the year 2008, and we continue right now, Gemara Sanhedrin. 9th of July, what did I say? Very so nice. Okay. How big is it? And we're on Sanhedrin. We continue now, Sanhedrin Dav Zion Omid Beis, in other words, 7B. Approximately two-thirds of the way down right now. Okay. Now, the next statement is still about Rav and his attitude. Okay? It says, Ki hava chose ambuho, the safre, although that's not necessarily a basre. When he would observe that there was a crowd following him, you know, a crowd of the disciples who wanted to show honor to him, right? So Omar, he said to himself, the following pasuk, taken from the book of Job, I don't have to tell you, it's not a happy pasuk then, right? Yalela Shabayim Siyo, even if his eminence goes up as high as heaven, nevertheless, in the end, he will sink down just like dung. In other words, he has to remember the fact that he should not become swell-headed because he has so many people who are following him and who are show him honor and so on. Remember that all this is sic transit gloria mundi, right? This is how the glory of the world disappears. Pardon me? Abuha, okay. Abuha is the word that we find in the Gemara. It's based on a Persian root. And it means a crowd. You know, don't forget, this is Babylonia. Babylonia was ruled by Persians, right? And so therefore, from time to time, you have Persian words that became part of the language. Yeah, you have plenty of Greek words, absolutely. That already had an Eretz Israel, you know, time in the Mishnah that Greek words entered into the vocabulary, right? Okay. Mazutra Chasida. Notice again, Mazutra, who was a very pious person, right? Okay, first of all, the Shabbat de Riglo. Shabbat de Riglo means the Shabbos of a Yontif. What was unusual about that? So you have to go back to the system of learning that they had in the yeshivas, there is a in Babylonia in those days. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's when you had the Rosh Hashiva. And the Rosh Hashiva, you know, would, you know, deliver his teachings, okay? And, of course, there would be discussion and everything else. And, of course, as we learned last week, you know, that he delivered his discourses, but he also had to have what? He had to have a torgeman, if you remember. The one whose job it was to say aloud what the you know, the master was teaching, so that he wouldn't have to strain his voice, okay? And so this was the normal procedure. However, when it was a Shabbos of the Yontif period, when you have all kinds of dinim, halachas, and so on, you know, that are connected with the holidays, so then they would give extra special drashas to which the multitudes would come. Not just the scholars, but the great masses would come in order to learn about. So I don't have to tell you, for example, we have a statement that says that 30 days prior to Yontif, that's when you begin, you know, Dosha Behilchos Chag, you begin to talk about the various laws pertaining to the holiday and so on, so that people will be prepared for it. And this, of course, especially true as far as Pesach is concerned, because there are so many things connected with it. But nevertheless, the same applies to other Yom Tovim as well, whether it's Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, Sukkot, right? The only one, also that I had to preach before Shavuos, but you know, Shavuos being a one-day holiday in Israel, is not as complicated. You don't have to change dishes or anything like that for Shavuos, you know. So that already was a little bit easier. But for the other things, you know, they required, people had to know how to observe properly. So there would be a multitude. So this is what's happening. Mazutra, they would carry him on Shabbos, this special Shabbos, okay, on their shoulders, on some kind of a conveyance that people would carry, you know, because Mazutra, at this point, he was an older man, wasn't able to walk too well, and so on, so in order to get to the yeshiva, in order to give his drasha, you know, so they had to carry him. So when they were carrying him, Omar Hochi, so he said, to himself, excuse me, the following. He said, Ki lo le'olam chosen, he says, strength is not going to last forever. V'yimnezer l'dor v'dor, nor will a crown remain from generation to generation. In other words, again, he would tell himself, look, the koyach that you have now is not going to remain always. And the glory that you have, literally the crown that you have, this also is not going to go into all generations.
This
right.
is from Proverbs.
Right. This is a verse from Proverbs. I'm sure. Yes. Darash Bar Kapora. Bar Kapora gave the following interpretation. He said, Mena Habilso, the Yomar Rabbanin. What is the source for this statement that the rabbis were fond of making? And this, of course, is a quotation taken from Pirkei Avos. They would say, Hevu misunim badin. You should be deliberate. Literally, you should be waiting, halting in your judgments. Okay? But in English, we translate usually as deliberate. Take your time in judging. Don't rush into it. You know, there are people that they figure first impression may have known the whole thing already, right? But this is not the way it is. You can't judge on first impressions. And certainly if it's a court case, and again essentially we're talking about Dayonim and everything else, then in that particular case we have to be very careful. So that this is what our sages said, Hebu Misunabad did, right? You have to be deliberate in what you do. Take your time in order to thoroughly examine and understand what it is that you're studying. So he says, but you know, and he wants to know, is there a pasuk somewhere that I could hang on to in order to illustrate this? Okay. One of my teachers many, many years ago, Oliver Sholem, by the way, is Dr. Chertov, who was the grandfather of the present, you know, the man who's the Homeland Security.
Chertov.
Right, yeah.
So his grandfather was a rabbi
and a teacher, and his father, too, is a rabbi. His father's a conservative rabbi in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Wow.
Right, yeah. He himself actually graduated at Yeshiva University.
Did he
check
something?
He did, right, yeah.
Did he go to Cardozo Law School?
I don't know what law school he went to, but he was a judge in New Jersey for many years prior to being named the Homeland Security Director.
Where did his grandfather teach?
His grandfather?
Where did he teach?
He taught at the Jewish Theological Center. He taught in the Teachers Institute. Right, and I was at that time a student in the Teachers Institute. So he said, a rabbi has a sermon with a text, but in reality, the text is a pretext. So he's looking for a text over here that might illustrate what he already had in mind. I mean, that you have to be deliberate in judgment. So what is the text? So the text is, he says, Kedixiv, right, that's written in the Torah, Lo sale bebalos, you should not go up on steps, the Samachleim right next to it, the Elah Mishpotim, and these are the judgments. All right, context. So happens that Lo sale bebalos al Mizbechi, this is the final verse in so the final verse in Parsha Yisro, okay? And then, what is the first verse that follows after that? The Elah Mishpatim Asher Tosim Utehev, which we'll also come to as we study it. Okay. There it says, Salam Ba'alois Al Mizbechi, you shall not go up on steps to my altar. So the question is, first of all, I have to tell you, so how did they go up to the altar? The answer is that they had a ramp going up.
A ramp.
A ramp is called the kevesh in that case. So when the Kohen had to go in order to place, you know, the sacrifice on the altar, so he had to go up on the incline, on the ramp, but not on steps. They were not allowed to have steps. Why not steps? So the explanation has been given is that if you go up steps, you know, a lot of people can run up steps very fast, but when it comes to an incline, it's already a little bit slower. So that this is what he's trying to say.
Or being
that,
deliberate.
Right. When you come to the Elah Mishpatim, you have to give judgment before it. Don't go up on steps. In other words, don't rush up, but instead go slowly and deliberately up in order to reach your judgment. Okay? So I say, it's a drasha. Okay. Pardon me?
A handicapped person could go up
the ramp. Yeah, of course, absolutely. Don't I know the problem?
Whereas if they were restricted to steps,
right,
then
true, very true. Yeah.
So that's very egalitarian, right?
With whatever you're wearing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Of course, in the case of Kahana, it was very important, too.
Yeah.
Right. This is why they invented trousers for Kahana.
Right, they couldn't.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
That's why I thought it was steps, because I know they were supposed not to approach.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the other possible. So that your nakedness shall not be revealed
right.
On it. Right. That's correct. That's what the Pasuk says.
Yeah.
Right.
Part of it is shnius.
Yes, of course. That's what we said. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Omar Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Eliezer said, "Nadayan and Dayan shall yivsal Rosh Yom Kodesh." He says, "How do we know that a judge should not literally step over the heads of a holy people?" Shenema loisalim baalos, right? Do not go up on steps. In other words, don't climb over. V'samachlei ve'elam mishpatim ashet ve'elam mishpatim. Okay. All right, now, let me explain something about that, too. In the yeshivas, again, back in the time that we're talking about, okay? The early centuries of the Common Era. The Talmidim actually sat on the ground. The teacher sat on a chair in front and, you know, and he gave his teachings, okay? Now, what would happen if the students had already gathered and then the teacher was late in coming in? It would mean that we have to step over the people who were sitting on the ground. Or
wouldn't they stand up when he came in?
It would be very nice, because the Torah says that you're supposed to stand up. Right. They say, but Torah would not be zaken, right? But you have to stand up before an elderly person, right? And you have to also show, you know, respect, right? By zaken, we mean literally people who are older, that you have to show deference to them and not treat them like, you know what. But also, zaken means also a scholar as well. It's another meaning of the word, right? So you have to show honor. But this was the system, so that therefore, he says that you should not, in other words, the teacher should be there beforehand, because it's wrong, you know, to step over people in order to get in. The same would apply, incidentally, that the system was that the greatest scholars among the disciples, among the Talmidim, would sit in the front row, okay, so that they could be moved up as time went on and so on. And this is what they did, you know. When you were first a newcomer, right, you sat in the back, and eventually, you know, you moved up through the ranks and so on and so forth. But the same thing would apply, you know, to a great scholar, not the teacher, but a great scholar also. He shouldn't come and go climbing over other people in order to get there. Be there on time so that something like this doesn't have to happen.
You're talking about respect.
Out of respect for people,
respect,
right.
Working both ways.
Right, right. They have to show respect to him, but by the same token, he has to respect his the people who were there. Exactly. Right. It's a two-way relationship. No question about that. All right. Now, the next thing. The pasuk says, Ve'ela ha-mishpotim, right? These are the judgments. Asher tosim, which you are to, what does tosim mean?
Put.
Literally put. Exactly. So they ask a good kasha. They say, Asher talamdei miboyle. The pasuk should have said, these are the judgments which you are to teach them, right? So what does it say, tosim? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyo. So Rabbi Yirmiyo said, the Tema, and there are those who say it wasn't Rabbi Yirmiyo, but it was Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba. It says, Eilu klei hadayonim, right? These are in reference to the, literally, the tools or the implements of the judges. Okay. We'll come to this in a second. What are the tools or the implements of the judges? And then I'll give you a different interpretation that we find is possible. Okay. Eliklei Adayon. Rav Huna, Kiava Nofak Ledino. When Rav Huna would come to give judgment, right, he would serve as the judge. Omar Hochi. So he would say, Atikuli Mone Chadutai, bring me the implements that I need for my store, literally. In other words, calling the court room, right? My store, the things that I need to do business with. Namely, Makel, Uritsua, the Shofra, the Sandala. What is a Makel? Makel is a stick, right?
Yeah.
It's a baton. You've heard, for example, in England, what do they do with a recalcitrant person? They hit him with a baton, okay? They do that in Singapore and places like that to this very day.
What do?
They hit a person with a baton. They give him a couple of the schmeissen.
Trunch
him, whatever you want. Right.
Cane
him, right. It's the same thing, right. That's what we're talking about, exactly. They used to do that to students too, who didn't behave themselves.
Oh,
ruler, and so I don't have to tell you. Correct. Okay. So that's the makel, and this is usually for what they call bacchus bardus. In other words, where a person didn't behave right, so this is what they did. Then, how about the ritzua, the belt, the strap? This we know. This we learned in Gemara called Malchus, right?
Only that 39.
Yeah, okay, right. that was the maximum. But if they judged that the person wasn't able to stand that many, so it could make it less, right. But anyway, this is what it is, you know. They were whipped with the stone, okay? So in other words, these are things that he needs as a judge in order to enforce his rulings if necessary, right? And then one of the other two things that we have over there, shofar, yes, right? What is the shofar for? The answer is that if they have to put somebody into cherem. Of course, he disobeyed, wouldn't answer, and so on and so forth, and they felt that they had to excommunicate him for a time, right? So in that case, in part, as part of the procedure for excommunication, they would blow also a shofar, right? And finally, sandal. What is that? Sandal, you know, sandal. So the answer is, of course, Yibum. There is a case for Yibum, exactly. Chalitza. No. Yeah, actually, it was used everywhere over there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's used in all the languages, use the word sandal. Right, right. So, the law is, a man dies. His wife never gave birth to any child, okay? So in that case, if he has a brother, the brother has the mitzvah to marry the woman. But what happens if either he doesn't want to marry her, or she doesn't want him to marry him, to marry her? Then in that case, he has to give her, not a get, because they're not married. But it has to have the process of what we call chalitza, where they remove the sandal on his foot, right? And then she has to spit the ground in front of him and make a declaration that kochi yaseh lo ish, this shall be done to the person, asher lo bona bias neochir b'Yisrael, who refused to build up a household for his brother in Israel. Because the idea of Yibum is not only that the widow would be taken care of by the brother, but also the child that would be born as a result of that union would then bear the brother's name, and presumably would be, the dead brother's name, and presumably would be entitled to a heritage as a result of that. So, in connection with that, he had to have also the sandal in case the case came up. Okay. Gemara called Yevamos, big Gemara like this, okay? And one of the major things, of course, that deals with is, when do you have Yibum, when do you have Chalitza, one of the various cases where it can't take place, and things like that, and so on. Okay? Okay. The pasuk then continues, but Savestrof Techem Wesahi Limor. Okay, and I commanded your judges at that time, right? So Omar Rabbi Yochanan said, Kineged Makir Utsua Te Zoris, that the judge should be insistent on using the rod and the belt in case he has to. In other words, if the culprit deserves it, then make sure that you punish that person. Okay.
They're talking about actual lashes. There is a punishment of lashes.
Yeah, that's the lashes, right? Yeah. That's the ritua.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the judge shouldn't withhold it if it requires it, because he has to enforce the discipline that the court has to enforce. Okay, yeah. What I wanted to say is, however, about the pasuk that we did before, Ela Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lefneihem. There's another Gemara, and Rashi bases it, his commentary in the Chumash upon that. He says, why does it say tosim, put? So he compares it to a shulchan oruch, to a table which has been prepared. You have everything in order. And this is the origin of the title of shulchan oruch that I'm sure every one of you has heard of. Because what is the shulchan oruch? Shulchan oruch is a companion of laws, right? In which it deals with all kinds of aspects of Jewish observance that are applicable today. The reason I say applicable today, because the Rambam went back also to the laws that pertain to the Beis HaMikdash, to Tar and Tuma and things like that, things that in general are not covered in the Shulchan Aruch because they wanted to be more practical as to life today. But, you know, it consists of four major parts. The Orach Chaim, which deals with laws of Shabbos and Yom Tov, primarily prayer, Talis, Tefillin, and so on and so forth, right? And then, of course, the Yoredeya, which deals in part with Kashrus, laws of what's, you know, Shechita, what's Treif, what's Kosher, mixtures, you know, Basar V'Cholov, you know, meat and milk, and so on and so forth. It also has, for example, Hillel's Talmud Torah, and then the last part, actually, of the Yoredeya deals with laws of Avelis. Okay? So these are things, you know, that a rabbi has to be familiar with, but the purpose of the Shulchan Aruch is really to be like an accessible table. You have there all the platters, all the food over there on the table arranged, and whatever you need, you go back to it, and so on. The other two major areas of the Shulchan Aruch consist of the Chosh Mishpat and It's Orach Chaim, Yoredeah, Eved Ha'ezer, and the Chosh Mishpat. Eved Ha'ezer deals with laws primarily of marriage, divorce, inheritance, and so on. And the Chosh Mishpat deals with sort of like the things that we're working with right now, namely judges, witnesses, how you take testimony, and stuff like that, and so on. Okay.
Monetary matters?
Pardon me?
Is it monetary matters?
Yeah, monetary and criminal too, but whatever Jews were able to judge, they were able to judge. Naturally, there's certain things. Capital punishment, obviously, could not be administered by a Jewish court. We had no power to. Chulin is part of Yoredeya. Yeah. Chulin is actually a Gemara. But in the Yoredeya, you have the laws about Shechita, Treifas, Bosa Becholov, and so on, right? Tarovis. Yeah, of course, a rabbi has to know it, right? But at the same time, a layman should also have a certain amount of knowledge, you know, so to have an idea of what to, how to carry on a Jewish household and things like that and so on. And when you have a shiloh, you have to know how to come and ask your shiloh, you know, what the problem may be. Okay? All right. Now, the Torah then continues and says, Shavua ben Achechem u'shvatatem tet, which means you are to listen literally to your brothers, so there's between the two brothers, okay? In other words, listen to both sides of the story, right? U'shvatatem, and then judge. So Amar Rabbi Chanina says, this posuk is an azhara, it's a warning, the Vezdin. To the Bezdin, Shalom Yishma Divrei Baldin Kodem Shavir Baldin Chaveiro. Okay? In other words, you cannot listen to the testimony of one of the litigants before the other litigant arrives. Both litigants have to be present at the time when either one gives the testimony. Don't take testimony first from one, the opposite of the other, because you're not going to get an honest picture. The Azhara, and at the same time, it's a warning, Laval Din, that the litigant himself Shelo yatim divorov ledayon kodem shevu balbin chaveiro. That, you know, he shouldn't try to present very favorably his own case to the judge before the other one comes in. Okay? Not only that, the judge is not allowed to hear one litigant without the presence of the other one, but also that the litigant himself also is not allowed to present his case as long as the other one is not there yet. Kori Beidame, we find another verse that deals with the same general idea. Shema ben Achechem, listen to what your brothers have to say. Rav Kano Omar Behocha, he says, I have a different pasuk. It says, Melo Sisa. All right, you know, in the Ten Commandments, what does it say? Lo Sisa, the shame, Adeshem Elkech, Lashov, etc., etc., right? But Lo Sisa means do not, I'll go to a different pasuk. It's a pasuk also that says, Lo Sisa Shema Shav. Lo Sisa Shema Shav. In other words, do not listen to a report which has no basis whatever. Okay? Don't listen to it. Lo Sisa Shema Shav. So it refers to things in general. I mean, Roger, we're talking about arbitration. Yeah, it applies to arbitration as well. Any type of a judgment. You have two litigants, right? Then in that particular case, don't listen, to a report which has no basis. Of course, it could be applied in a general rule, but now we're talking to whom? We're talking to the judge, the dayan. Don't listen, in other words, to something that cannot be substantiated by the other one. But see also how they interpret it, all right? Because then he says, instead of reading it now as Lo Sisa, you can also read it. Remember again that there are no dots in the Torah, right? No voweling. You can understand it as Lo Sasi, which means don't cause a false thing to be heard by the judge. In other words, you, the litigant, don't tell him a bull story either, okay? You have to, you have to hear both sides equally, okay? And don't listen just to one without the other, because one without the other, then it is a shema shav. It is a statement which has no validity, whatever.
Then say that if the statement is made without the other person present,
right,
it's a false statement.
Of course,
it's equal to a false.
Right.
Statement.
I mean, even if the
even
facts
if
are true,
the truth, it's still
right.
Equal to
exactly.
A false.
Exactly.
Right.
Excuse me. Okay. That.
You want some water?
We'll see if I can do without it for the time being. Mishpatetem tzedek, all right? You are to judge righteously, right? Omar Resh Lakish. Tzedek es hadin v'achakach hoschech. So Resh Lakish interprets it as follows. Judge justly, right? So Resh Lakish translated, tzedek es hadin. First make sure that you know what the facts are, okay? The achakach, and only after that, koschechel, do you make your final decision. But first you have to know what the facts are. Right, for both sides, absolutely. Yeah, you have to listen to both sides, right. Okay. Then they continue with the exposition. By the way, the two sources that we have primarily for this psukim, one of them is Parsha Yisro, where, of course, you know, at that point, Yisro gives Moshe Rabbeinu advice as to how to pick judges and so on and what they to do. And then we have at the beginning of Parsha Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu recounts what took place 40 years ago, you know, and he amplifies again this little section about the judges and so on. Okay, so Bein Ish uvein Ochiv, between one man and his brother, and the rest of the pasuk says uvein Gero. However, at this point we'll stop with the uvein Gero, but we'll take a look at what is Bein Ish uvein Ochiv. Omer Rav Yehuda said, "Afilu bein bayis la'aliyo uvein gero." Okay, this we have to understand a little bit. I have to read into it. Okay, based upon Rashi's understanding over here, Rashi says that a person passes away. He has two sons. Okay, can he arbitrarily assign? No. Can the judge arbitrarily say, okay, you get, let's say, the downstairs, and you get the upstairs, right? Bayis and the aliyah. Aliyah is the upstairs. Okay? Is this the way to do it? Just arbitrarily on the basis? No. So what you have to do is to listen, judge, and according to Rashi, says actually what you have to do is to decide what is the monetary value of the property itself, Ben Gero. What is Gero? Gero takes in a sense like Morgor. Gar, you know, the verb gar in Hebrew means to dwell someplace. So Beit Megorim in Hebrew means, you know, a dwelling place, okay? So judge what would be the value of the Yerusha of the whole house, and then you split it up on an equal basis. But don't, let's say, I'll give the downstairs, which is a better place to live, than the upstairs, which may be only a small attic upstairs or something like that. Divided equally.
A first son would get...
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, yeah. The first son, actually, yes, would be entitled to twice the amount. Right, right, yeah. But even so, you still have to take into effect that you can't cheat the other one either, you know. So you have to first establish what is the total value, and then on that basis you can determine what's what.
But at the end of the day, if all that is there is the actual house,
yes,
then the one of them is going to get the top and one of them is going to get the bottom.
All right. But they could make some kind of accommodations monetarily as to what's what. Understand?
You mean that if they would sell the property?
Right, right. They would sell
but
the property.
Subject to
no
they're
question.
Not selling the property, right. They'll have to deserve.
Not in that case. Look, it's up to them to make an arrangement between themselves, but not for the judge to arbitrarily make it the judgment. That's the point.
But does he have to say how much the value is? What happens if he says that you take upstairs and you take downstairs and there's no objection?
Well, if there would be no objection, we're not talking. Obviously, if they're there.
Right, so I thought they had to make an offer.
They're there because there is an objection.
Right.
That's the reason that, you know, if Reuben wants this and Shimon wants that.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Yeah,
you understand, right, yeah. We have to sort of read into the text.
Right.
I mean, what is Rashi thinking at this particular point? I mean, that he makes the comment that he does. Okay. I'm a Rabbi Huda. I feel a bein tano l'shtirayim. The same thing would apply as to sharing what? The oven and the stove. Which is the more expensive thing? Okay. That is written, Lo sakiru ponim ha-mishpat. You are not literally to recognize a face when it comes to judgment. In other words, not to show favoritism to one person or the other, right? Rabbi Yehuda Omer says, Lo sakirehu, which means that you are not also, not only is the judge not supposed to show favoritism to the litigant, right? But lo sakirehu means, and the litigant himself should not show a preference that this is the judge that he wants because he's his pal or something like that. So therefore we have now an illustration of that. Rabbi Yehuda Emer, lo sakirehu, right? So then Rabbi Elazar Emer, lo sadakrehu. Don't make him either, into somebody that you say, I don't know you, right? But we'll see. What does he mean? That's not great, he says. So he gives an example. Ushpitzilei the Rav. It so happened that Rav rented a dira from his landlord, okay? And this landlord now had a case. So also the Kalbe Ladina, he came to Rav that Rav should paskin the case. Omalei, so Rav said to him, Rav Ushpitzinchi at, hey, you're my landlord, aren't you? Omalo in, he said, yeah. Omalei, and then he continued and he said, Dina Isli, I have a case that I want you to judge. So Omalei, so he said to him, and we continue now with the test of it Aleph. Okay. Yeah. Okay. What did he say to him? Let's find out. So Rav said, "Tesilda lecha ledina." He says, "I am puzzle for you." In other words, I cannot be the judge in your case. Right? I'm disqualified from being your judge. Okay. So Amalei Rav, so Rav said to Rav Kana, who's, right over there, and he says, Puk Dayane, go ahead, Rav Kana, you take the case, all right, go and judge him. So Chazye de Havaka Gaispe, so he saw that this litigant, this landlord, right, was boasting about what? That he was boasting about his friendship, his relationship with Rav, right? So Amalei, so what did Rav Kana say to this man? He said to him, "Eat Tzayasa, Tzayasa. If you will obey what I'm saying, okay. Be lo, but if not," he says, "Mafikna lecho Rav be'udach. I'm going to remove Rav out of your ear." In other words, what? I'll punish you or something, or I'll be even more strict with you because you're trying to play upon the fact that you know Rav. Rav Kana is not impressed with that. He told me, if you don't listen, then in that case I'm going to enforce the law strictly against you. Then the pasuk says, Kakoton Kagodol Tishmiyud. Literally, you are, whether small or large, you are to listen to what it's all about, right? In other words, the judge has to listen. All right, so how do you explain Kakoton Kagodol? So, Omar Reish Lakish, so Reish Lakish says, Sheyehei Choviv Alecho Din Shel Pruto Kidin Shel Be'a Moda, says. Koton means, in this particular case, you can understand Karkoton and Karkodol, right? That Karkoton means somebody who is never an Oraban or something like that, as compared to a Godol, somebody who is a powerful person, right? Could be wealthy, could be a big politician or something or other. But this is not how Reish Lakish is explaining the pasuk. Reish Lakish is explaining the pasuk as follows. He says that whether it's a trial for a very small amount of money, that's the koton, pruta, Pruta. What is Pruta? Pruta was the smallest, the smallest coin that they had. Okay? So whether it's all that an issue is a Pruta, or whether it's one which involves, Mea Mona. Mona itself, to begin with, is 100 dinarim. Okay, dinner is, there are a lot of prutas into a dinner, and how many? And then 100 dinars, so in other words, it's like a fortune, okay? Whether it's a case which involves just a small amount of money, or whether it is a case which involves a great deal of money, but at any rate, Tishbe'un, you have to listen to it and judge it. That's one interpretation. Yes.
In other words, he's saying there's no such thing as a small case.
Right.
They're all the same.
They're all the same in that you as a judge, you have to listen to the facts and then judge accordingly. Right,
and
exactly.
You don't put aside a case.
Right. Small. This is another interpretation now. Right. And this is another one. So, the Gemara asks, Lamai Hilchasa, what is the halacha about over here? It says, Ilema, if we're talking about the Unebe or Mipsake, right, you mean that the judge has to examine carefully what the facts are and to make his decision based on that? Pshita, this is obvious. We're not talking about that. This is obvious. Obviously, he has to do that. Elo, and here we come to you, with like Dume, right? Don't, if you have a small case and it's on the docket, right? Don't push aside that case in order to go to the bigger case, because the bigger case is, it involves more, whatever, it's more important or something like that, to the average person or something like that. You have to go in order, you have to be fair, no matter whether it is small or great, no matter what it is.
That word,
Pshita is like Pashat. Right, yeah, right, right. It's Aramaic for Pashat, right, exactly. Yes.
The word that was used,
Yes.
This has to be deliberate.
Yeah. But also, he's pointing out.
Well, the judge deliberates.
This we understand. Okay, all right. Now, but the point is making, of course, the judge has to deliberate no matter what the case is, whether it's small or a big case, right? But he's also saying don't push aside the small case because it's you think it's not important enough since there's a big case coming up. You have to judge both even-handedly, okay? A couple of more minutes because how I am at the end of the period. Lo so guru b'nei ish, which means to not be afraid of any man, right? So one interpretation is one that we already had a couple of pages back. Rabbi Chanan said, Al tachtis tovech b'nei ish. He says, don't hold back your words because you're afraid to express it before somebody, But you should not be afraid. Again, Lo so guru means, don't be afraid in this particular case, okay? Ki ha-mishpot Elohim hu, because judgment belongs to God. Amar Rav Chono, Rav Chanina, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rav Chono said, the son of Rabbi Chanina, you said, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbeinu Shel Olam says, Lo Dayan L'Rashoyim, Shenot L'Mizeh, Mamon Menos L'Mizeh, Shelo Kedin. It's not enough that wicked judges, so we have to supply the word judges over here, because that's what we're talking about, that wicked judges take money from this person, who happens to be in the right, and they give it to the other person who is in the wrong, unjustly, right? But the Rebbeinu Shlom says, they burden me with the fact that I have to then give back money to the one to whom it belongs. Namely, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has to make a special effort, which he would not have to make if the judge were an honest judge, to in order to reimburse the person who has been wronged in judgment.
Is it the second judge that's going to have to correct the first judge? Is that what we're talking about?
The Rebbeinu Shel Olam. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the judge.
Right.
Correct
the error.
Okay. All right, I'm going to stop at this point. Fine. Okay, tonight is the 16th of July in the year 2008, and we're continuing now in Sanhedrin, Daf Ches of an Aleph, about line 14 or 15, from where we left off last week. All right. The quotation now is V'hadavor asher yikshe mikem, and the thing which is too difficult for you, this is Moshe Rabbeinu talking to the judges whom he appoints, and he indicates that if there is something that they can't decide by themselves, then it says Takrivun Eli, bring it to me, Ushmativ, and I will listen to it. Okay.
Didn't Yitro give him advice to
select? Right. But this time it's Moshe Rabbeinu who's telling the judges whom he has selected to do that. All right. So, Omar Rabbi Chanina says, V'yitemo Rabbi Yoshua. There are those who say there was Rabbi Yoshua who say this. He said, Aldor zeh ne'nash Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was punished by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam for this word. Shenemar, as it is written, Vayakre Moshe es mishpotom lifnei Hashem.